Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Wednesday, and Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs will be joining us today on May 18th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, gold took a little bit of a beating today after the April minutes of the FOMC meeting was released. And shortly after they did that, they tanked because those minutes detail a possible rate increase come June. We'll be talking about that in the second period of the program today. But to give our listeners a little bit of an idea of why gold is down, $22.10 at $1,257. Silver was down 41, breaking into that 1692 level. It's a long time since we broke $17. So goodbye today at 1692. Platinum was down 29 at 1,028, and palladium is down 12 at 577. I just want to remind folks, hey, remember the last time they took a rate increase was in December, and we're up 20% since the first of the year. So, hey, let them increase. This is a knee-jerk reaction of what could possibly happen. And I don't think that it's going to have continued pressure on gold and silver. USDX today is up 0.62 at 95.19. Again, that's up according to the minutes. Crude oil down 0.52. at 47.79, and the paper markets today, there was a little bit of pressure but they were basically pretty much all unchanged throughout the day. The Dow was down a few points at 17,525. The NASDAQ was up at 23 at 47.39. The S&P unchanged at 2,047. 10-year yield, that was an interesting pop, 0.188 up 0.12. And the euro again was hit down 0.80, of course, with the dollar strength at 1.12. And once again, Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs is joining us this afternoon, as she does each and every Wednesday. Good afternoon, Wendy Wilson.
Hello, Melody. How are you?
I'm doing just great.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about why younger people are having strokes. What do you think?
Well,
okay.
I don't know what I think about anybody having strokes. Oh, you know, it's doesn't sound like fun.
And no,
it is curious. And how many more are having what percentage of young are having them as today as compared to, you must have a timeline on this.
Oh, well, I have some stats. I really do. You know, science is telling us it's normal to have a stroke as you get older. That's not normal. Disease illness is not normal. They should say it's common, but they shouldn't say it's normal. So what is really unusual about the stroke information now, because nobody talks about strokes. It's so commonly known. But it is mega news when younger folks in their 40s are having strokes. So younger people in the prime of their lives are experiencing them while, get this, the stroke set, you know, people over 60, they're having less strokes. So what's up with that? Okay, so what we're going to talk about is an ischemic stroke, because that's on the rise. An ischemic stroke is the result when your artery blood flow from the heart to the brain that's rich with oxygen and nutrition gets blocked and choked off. And this process, if it happens, the brain neurons fail to produce energy and they can shut down and die. So if we look at the global stats on all types of stroke, we find that in 2012, there are 6.7 million stroke deaths globally. That's 12%. And so according to New Jersey University Hospital Stroke Center, stroke's the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. And about 130,000 Americans die from a stroke every year. So that means every 4 minutes, Al, Melanie, someone is dying from a stroke. They are reporting that 3.8 million women compared to 3 million men tend to suffer from strokes each year. So there's a few things that can be causing this arterial blockage in the neck and head area for the ischemic stroke. The most common reason we get is the artery was blocked off because of, you know, plaque, cholesterol plaque, arterial sclerosis. Then the other issue could be blood clots. They call it thrombosis. This is when the fibrinogen protein in your blood can't keep the blood from creating all these clots. Then they travel to the brain and cause an embolism. Clots can also travel to your heart and can cause arterial fibrillation or AFib or even a heart attack. So what's affecting this blood flow? It can't reach the brain, and this is why we're getting strokes. And these are considered natural causes for strokes. But there are other causes I want to talk about real quick, because this is what people don't really pick up on. The human body reacts sometimes negatively to certain substances. For instance, if you're taking illegal drugs like ecstasy, cocaine, methamphetamines, they can put you at a higher risk of stroke, as well as appetite suppressant drugs, nasal decongestants, over-the-counter cough and cold medications that contain ephedrine or pseudoephedrine. These all encourage stroke conditions. And there are certain classifications of prescription drugs that also increase your risk. They would fall under the category of migraine headache medications, beta blockers, hypertension meds, hormone replacement therapy, chemotherapy, birth control pills, blood thinners, weight loss drugs, antibiotic steroids, which are for male hormone problems, anemia, breast cancer, and swelling, and of course the drugs they usually prescribe you for thrombosis to thin out the blood for clots can actually create a clot problem. And it also should be mentioned that head and neck trauma, if you ingest hydrogen peroxide or if you're drinking heavily, this also can bring about a stroke. So, and then there's also surgery. Certain surgeries make you more likely to have strokes. Even if you have any surgery, you're more likely to get clots. But it's especially high for hip and knee replacement surgery that produces a lot of clots. And also if you're going for a study called a lumbar myography, where they take dye, put it in the spinal cord, it's a contrast fluid, and they can see the space between your vertebrae. So these all put you at a higher risk of having a stroke. And let me ask you, Al, Melanie, who's more likely to have a stroke? Men or women?
I think actually it's women. I'm not sure if that's true, but I think it's women. And I know that if that's the case, then Melody will say It's men are driving. We're making.
You're making us have a stroke.
Well, okay. Well, according to Southwestern Medical Center, especially the ischemic strokes, which account for about 88% of all strokes, they typically occur in people, as I said, over the age of 60, but they can occasionally occur in children as well. But they are reporting 55,000 more women each year than men have strokes. So patients can sometimes be told that, oh, you had a mini stroke. It's called a TIA, and it means transient ischemic attack. And if you have a mini stroke, you're more likely to have a full-blown one as well. So let's look at this risk assessment. You know, other than the street drugs and the over-the-counter prescription meds and stuff, what else can put you at risk of having a stroke? Well,
what
our
about
risk.
Beer?
Yeah.
What
well, our risk goes
beer
up.
Is beer still safe or not?
Well, it could push your blood pressure up. Well, our risk goes up significantly if we do have hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, if we're overweight, if we abuse alcohol and smoke, and we're relatively inactive, we don't get regular exercise. But here's where it really gets interesting. There was a report that was in the Washington Post, and they reported on an article they were reviewing in the Journal of the American Heart Association. And there were some really interesting statistics on atypical data on ischemic stroke patients. According to the journal article, they used 10-year data reporting from the year 2000 to 2010 on hospitalized ischemic stroke patients because they were spiking at younger age groups between the age groups of 25 to 44, while the older age groups over 60 were declining. So the data suggests that there was a 44% stroke increase risk in the young adults and a 20% drop in older patients over the age of 60. And physicians were speculating that stroke numbers for the younger set could be from maybe a congenital heart defect or even trauma. But when they really analyzed all the data from the nationwide inpatient sample database, they found this is where the two groups kind of switched places. And a 20% drop for those over 60 and a 44% increase on the age group between 25 and 44. So they're wondering, what's going on with this? Well, there was this one woman who said, you know, she was like 40. She said, you know, I experienced this dizziness and I fell down one day. I didn't think I was having a stroke. She had a TIA. And then the next day she had a full-blown stroke. So if you have symptoms like that, and they get better, but they don't go away, it could mean you're having a stroke. Science estimates that we lose about 2 million brain cells each minute during a stroke. And if you go to the hospital, they'll give you this these stabilization drugs. They call them clot-busting. It's called tissue plasminogen activator, and it costs $2,000 a treatment. So these young people are finding themselves in the hospital suffering from a stroke, getting these drugs, and then they have to go on food stamps to pay the medical bills. So doctors tell people 80% of strokes are preventable, and it's preventable through clean lifestyle, regular exercise, limit the alcohol, and don't smoke. Right?
I agree with it.
All right.
I mean, it seems to be the formula for almost everything.
Yeah, exactly.
It really is. It's kind of the uniform, universal health formula, and yet it's hard for people to follow, especially
well,
the exercise part and sensible diet.
Well, here are some of the symptoms. If you experience severe dizziness, some confusion, if you have difficulty speaking, if you have a loss of vision, if you have difficulty walking, if you have a severe headache, fatigue, if you lose your balance and have sudden numbness on one side of the body, it's pretty much a sign that you may need to get to medical treatment. Now, I want to cap off real quick because there are some herbs that can help us also sidestep the stroke problem. One of them is rosemary. It provides this rich source of vitamin B6 as well as iron and calcium, and it contains natural oils. And it used to be used as a meat preservative al before we had refrigeration, but it does improve memory, so it's a really good herb to use even for post-stroke recovery. If you pair it with ginkgo, it works even better. So the folks, let's see, it was a study done at Northumbria University, Newcastle, UK, they say rosemary herb improves your memory by 75%. Has a lot of antioxidants, and it reduces that oxidative stress on your brain cells. Another herb you might want to pick up and look at is hawthorn berry. Has lots of flavonoids in it. And we were talking about the fibrinogen protein, which causes the if you don't have it in balance, your blood will clot together. Well, they tested the hawthorn berry. This was in a study at the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And it not only improves the force of your heartbeat and improves your blood pressure, but it also helps balance that fibrinogen protein so it doesn't convert to fibrin. If it converts to fibrin, this is when you get those clots. So they tested it against a lot of these anti-clotting medications, and it worked just as well or even better. So no side effects on your hawthorn berry, and most people experience results within just a few days to a few weeks. So you've got natural tools out there, Al, Melanie, if you want to use them.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned hydrogen peroxide could precipitate a stroke. Now, I know a lot of people.
I drink it.
Well, they do. They drink it. And, I mean, they take a small, an eyedropper or whatever, a couple of drops, maybe all they're taking, in a glass of water, and supposedly it goes into their system and does some benefit. They believe it's helping them. I don't know anyone who's drinking it by the bottle or whatever. But what quantity of hydrogen peroxide are they talking about?
Well, I didn't get a quantity, but basically, I know people were taking it for things like cancer and AIDS and stuff like that. You know, but you hydrogen peroxide, you know, is going to disrupt a balance. I wouldn't take it personally. It's probably going to mess with your protein in your blood, that fibrinogen balance, and cause you to have that clot. So, because everything you ingest, you know, is absorbed pretty much, and you know, it's going to go right into the bloodstream eventually. So I would watch, avoid that.
I always thought hydrogen peroxide was a little silly. Mm-hmm. It may be wonderful, but I always thought it was silly because it just seemed to me that it would react with everything that was in your stomach and whatever, and it really wouldn't. I didn't expect that hydrogen peroxide would get out into your body to any significant degree. Am I mistaken about that?
Well, it does attack any bacteria, okay? And that's why a lot of people, you know, will do that. It'll attack fungus and stuff like that. You can take coffee. If you can take a coffee enema and get a caffeine high doing that, because the tissue absorbs this stuff, you're definitely going to absorb what you ingest.
Well, you know, I mean, a coffee enema, that's at the end of the roads, relatively speaking, and everything's that you're designed to ingest or absorb maximally at the bottom end of your alimentary canal, but you take some hydrogen peroxide and swallow it. There should be enough, I'm just guessing, there should be enough problems in your stomach or wherever that the hydrogen peroxide would be consumed before it ever got to where it was.
I think it would keep it busy there, huh? Well, you run the risk of really disrupting gut floras when you do that.
Yeah,
so that's why I would recommend doing it. But if anybody's interested, Apothecary Herbs, they have the brain concentrate with your rosemary and ginkgo, and they do have the hawthorn berries. They also have a heart attack pack, and they also have a heart cholesterol blood pressure formula. So they got some tools there if people want to, you know, improve their proactiveness regarding all this cardiovascular stuff and stay out of the hospital. They can visit our website online at thepowerherbs.com or give us a call for a catalog. The number is toll-free at 866-229-3663. Thank you, Wendy.
Look forward to talking to you next week. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. Toll-free 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Here's an article from Newsmax Finance. The headline is Make America Gold Again. Fed bashing spurs call for an old fix. Headlines are interesting to me, because they try to cram information in there with the least number of words, try to communicate an idea. And sometimes they succeed and sometimes they don't. After you read the article, you understand what the headline is about, but it's not necessarily clear just looking at it. Make America Gold Again? Fed bashing spurs cold calls for an old fix? Not very illuminating. But the article reads in part, it says the gold standard is one of the oldest ideas about money, but the hardest of hard currency, of hard money hawks, sense an opening to breathe new life into it. Decades ago, the amount of cash circulating in a country was often limited by the stash of bullion held in its government coffers. However, since 2008, developed world, that would be the great onset of the Great Recession, developed world policy has headed in the exact opposite direction. You understand that? It used to be, there was a time when the money supply was somewhat limited, particularly if we were using gold or silver as a basis for our money. You couldn't spend the gold or silver out of thin air, and therefore, you know, there was a limit on how much currency could be in circulation within a country. But they're saying since 2008, developed world policy has headed in the exact opposite direction, meaning that they're using quantitative easing to, or they have been using quantitative easing, they still are in Europe and Japan, to try to stimulate the stagnant economies with masses of additional currency. Just put so much money out there that people say, let's spend it. Got so much cash in my wallet, it's beginning to hurt my hip. So let's go out and spend all that capital or that currency. Expanding the powers of central banks to stoke growth. That was the idea. We would let the central banks push this massive amount of money. You know, we don't think much about this today, but at 2008 thereabouts, when the central bank and government said, "Look, we're going to pump out $800 billion to try to offset the Great Recession," what we came to call the Great Recession. There was enormous debate over this. Oh my gosh, $800 billion. It had never been done before. You know, people questioned the wisdom and what would be the impact and the rest of it. And before it was done, we wound up generating something like $4 trillion. Altogether, the Fed's balance sheet went up by nearly $4 trillion. I mean, $800 billion, as it turns out, was nothing. And yet at the time, there was, oh my gosh, every hand wringing, and no one could believe it. Oh my God, how could that happen? Well, in any case, for those in the U.S. who see much risk and little benefit in the current course, gold, that would be this quantitative easing and Federal Reserve trying to stimulate the economy, gold is still a rallying point, and their audience may be growing. Jesse Hurwitz, the U.S. economist at Barclays Capital in New York, says the fringe has become the mainstream. He sees the gold standard as a bad idea, but something we'll be increasingly talking about. Of course, full restoration of a system that reigned in the U.S. for a century through the 1970s is almost inconceivable. When they talk about a century through the 1970s, we're essentially talking about since the Civil War. And I disagree that the system reigned through the 1970s, the gold-based system. It was completely canceled by 1971 when Nixon closed the gold window. Now, they're saying, this economist, he says, this is a bad idea. Right? I'm looking at that because it's old news. We had gold from Civil War up through 1971. And some semblance of gold, and now we've done it since 1971, 29 years, 39, 45 years, basically, we've had a system that does not depend at all on gold. Now, to me, I look at this and I say the post-Civil War century of the gold standard, which this economist, he says, oh, this is a bad idea. And he says the gold standard, that was also when the U.S. standard of living was rising. And our national power was growing to become the world's number one superpower and world number one creditor. We were lending to the world. Right? We were rich while we had a gold standard. We had problems. We had the Great Depression. We had some other problems. We had some problems, but we were the wealthiest nation on earth while we had the gold standard. Right? Since that century of fabulous real growth and prosperity, since it ended in 1971, we went completely off the gold standard. Our standard of living has at best stagnated. Prosperity has diminished. Optimism has diminished. Productivity has diminished. Our status in the world has entered what may be a long-term decline, and we've become the world's number one debtor in my lifetime. We have gone from the biggest creditor in the world to the biggest debtor. And that's happened at the same time. We were biggest creditor while we were on a gold standard. We were the biggest debtor since we've gone off of it. My point is that when when Jesse Hurwitz, the brilliant economist at Barclays Capital, declares that a return to the gold standard is a bad idea, I have to ask, bad for who? Bad for the people in the middle class of this country? We're doing fine on the gold standard. Or is it? Or was it bad for the banking elite who employ Mr. Hurwitz, the brilliant economist? This nation rose to glory with a gold standard. Without the gold standard, America is floundering on the verge, and perhaps on the verge of a calamity. The article continues, another line from the article. It says, even many gold bugs say it can't be done, and there's near unanimity among economists that it shouldn't be attempted, meaning that the gold, no one should even, shouldn't even try to restore the gold standard. And he claims there's near unanimity among economists that we should not return to the gold standard. Does this near, my question is this, does this near unanimity among economists tell us that gold is bad? All the economists say, ooh, gold standard is bad. Or does it tell us that the incompetent, that the economists are generally incompetent? If they all agree that gold is bad and we were doing fine when we had it and we're not doing well since we got rid of it, what is the problem? Is the problem with gold or is the problem with the economists? And they argue, it goes on here, and it argues that the U.S. would be in much worse shape, they say, meaning this near unanimity among economists, the U.S. would be in much worse shape with a Federal Reserve stripped of its ability to freely tinker with the money supply. I mean, this just cracks me up. We are the biggest debtor in the world. The national debt is so great, it's impossible to pay. Our middle class has been decimated. Many of our jobs and industries have been shipped overseas. We're invaded by illegal aliens. No one protects our borders. It's generally agreed that we are close to an economic catastrophe, or we'll not say we'll necessarily get one, but it's certainly a lot of agreement that there's one potentially right around the corner. And yet we're told that virtually all economists agree that things would be even worse if we had a gold-backed monetary system that prevented the Federal Reserve from freely tinkering with the money supply. How? How could things be even worse with a gold standard than they've become in the last 45 years without a gold standard? Do you have an answer for that question, Melody?
Huh? I'm sure you do.
No, I don't. I don't think they could be worse. I mean, it's, this would be even worse. No, when things are just about as bad as they could be, all things considered, given the size of the debt, we're the biggest debtor nation on earth. This is going to blow up in everybody's face. Everyone understands this, and the only thing we don't understand is when. This is going to happen this year, next year, 5 years from now, who knows? But it looks like it could be close. In any case, there's no way out of this. We have painted ourselves into a strange and painful corner where there's no painless way out. And I'm arguing, and Melody and I have been arguing for some time, the reason we're there is because we were dumb enough as a nation to allow the government to take us off the gold standard. And government says, oh, this is great. This is going to be, we can tinker. You know, they're great at tinkering. They've done such a magnificent job. They've nearly destroyed this country with their tinkering, and they're saying, don't bring back the gold standard for God. That would inhibit our ability to tinker. I'm saying, look, the best thing you folks can do is insist on bringing back the gold standard. Here's a few more lines, a few more paragraphs from this article I've been reading from. And it says, but the backdrop to this well-rehearsed debate is changing. Rumbling disconnect with the economy has left the establishment under siege, and you can't get more establishment than the Federal Reserve. So in a curious twist, it's becoming easier for supporters of hard money, historically a policy favored by the rich, to give the idea a populist slant. The money conjured up by central bankers after the crisis, the argument goes, all went to the bankers, leaving most Americans no better off. Well, isn't that basically what happened? It's time to tie the Fed's hands, if not to gold, then at least to something. Comment Ted Cruz in one of the early candidate debates last year said the Fed should get out of the business of trying to juice the economy and simply be focused on sound money and monetary stability, ideally tied to gold. Now, I didn't like Cruz. I didn't trust him, but I have to admit, the guy was at least advocating gold. And he was candidate, and he was the number two Republican candidate, as it turned out, for the nomination this year, Donald Trump. He's also told WMUR Television in New Hampshire in March of last year, this is a year ago, when he said, we used to have a very, very solid country, because it was based on a gold standard. But he went on to say it would be tough to bring it back because we don't have the gold. Other places have the gold. That may or may not be true. We don't know how much gold we actually have in the U.S. Treasury. Some people think it's been exhausted, and that might be true. I don't know. I haven't been there. I don't know what the truth of the matter is. Others think we may still have most of that 8,200 tons we're alleged to have. It's hard to say, but Trump at least was sensitive to the idea of gold March of last year. More recently, he's backed away from the idea of restoring a gold standard, even if it was possible. And he says, well, we have to have this system where they can inject fiat dollars, you know, to whatever number, to whatever amount they think is necessary to somehow stimulate the economy. But my point is that both Cruz and Trump, at least a year ago, they were ready to go with gold. They wanted to support that idea. Gold advocates targeting the Federal Reserve include Audit the Fed movement, led by Kentucky Senator Rand Paul. His father, Ron Paul, was standard bearer for gold. Trump and Sanders are among those who've endorsed the effort to scrutinize the central bank's books. I mean, there's one of the questions right there. The Fed wants the right to tinker with the money supply as if they're doing a good job of it. They're not. If the Fed was someone we could trust, don't you think we should be able to see their books? If they're allegedly helping us, they're here to help us, and they're going to tinker with the money supply to do what's right for the American people and to stimulate the economy and all the rest of that, okay, how about showing us your books? How much gold do you really have? They're not showing us. They won't say. They don't tell. You know, what can you say about an agency, an organization that operates in that kind, with that level of secrecy? It generally indicates that they're up to something. And it's not good deeds. Not many people operate in secrecy when they're doing good deeds. They demand secrecy when they're doing things that are a little bit shifty and maybe corrupt. George Gilder thinks the gold standard ideas are on the way back, whatever the politicians do. He's the founder and chairman of Gilder Technology Group and best-selling author who helped popularize supply-side economics in the Reagan era. He says trillions of dollars that fly around global currency markets every day are a bizarre abuse of capitalism, sucking vitality out of the real economy. He's talking about the trillions of fiat dollars. He's implying an idea that, you know, I've broached on this program a number of times in the last weeks. The whole system is nuts. It's crazy. And the insanity flows from this idea that we can take a fiat dollar, a mere piece of paper, and ask it to function, that's loaned into circulation in particular, and expect it to function like real money. It's because we've embraced this insanity in the first place that we wind up coming to crazy ideas like negative interest rates and moving from the world's biggest creditor to the world's biggest debtor in the span of 45 years, 50 years thereabouts. Jim Rekards, chief global strategist, money manager for West Shore Funds and author of The New Case for Gold, he says the Fed and peers have expanded their balance sheets to the outer limits of confidence. He sees a chance of close to 100% that a downturn worse than the Great Recession is on the way in the next few years. And then, he says, you're going to be hearing a lot more about gold. And he's not just talking about investing in gold where you have it in your hand or you have your own supply of gold. He's talking about there will be more talk about we need to go back to a gold standard. And I think we do.
We will.
Despite what most of the economists are saying, I think we need to have it. We did well while we had it. We're doing badly without it. Let's take a break for some more commercials. Melody and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here from the New York Post. As Venezuela burns, socialism's paying big for its corrupt rulers. Now, this is an interesting article to me because it triggers an idea that we'll get to here. I'll read from the article a little bit, and then we'll get to what strikes me as an interesting hypothesis, not necessarily true, but an interesting hypothesis. Venezuela's descent into socialist hell continues, even as top officials live high off the hog. There's very little food on the shelves, almost no medicine, and electricity is constantly interrupted around the country because of rampant inflation. All right. Inflation, of course, erases government debt.
Before you go any further, Al, I just want to make a comment. There was a deal today made between Venezuela and India. They're going to barter medicine for oil, and it's an interesting story. But you had mentioned where there was almost no medicine, and that was just so. Anyway,
and the people are broke. They can't
again. Broke.
Because of rampant inflation, the few basic commodities that are still available are unaffordable, even for those who until recently were relatively well off. Gangs run wild in crime-ridden streets. Increasingly violent pro- and anti-government rioters clash daily. Now, if we've got pro-government rioters fighting with anti-government rioters, we certainly have the basis for a civil war. Right? I'm not saying we're going to have a civil war, but we have, if they're fighting, you know, when a country goes right down the pipe, as Venezuela has more or less done, if anybody's out there, you expect it to be anti-government protesters. I get that. But who is still supporting the government? And the only one it can be, probably, is current or former government employees. People who are expecting some government pension, dyed-in-the-wool communists, hard to say. But in any case, they are reporting that we have both pro- and anti-government activists who are fighting, clashing daily, and that could lay the foundation for a civil war. The Dawn focus on a man named Rafael Ramirez, who is the Venezuelan ambassador to the United Nations. This man of the people has acquired a taste for life's nicer pleasures, such as top-of-the-line Chateau Petrus wines. But wait, how can a representative of a country that preaches socialist equality afford bottles of wine that cost thousands of dollars? You know, you can't afford that quality of wine on an ambassador's salary, especially from a country like Venezuela. So how does he acquire those well-tailored suits and fine-looking shirts exuding dignified elegance while his countrymen struggle to find food for dinner or keep the lights on at home? Does he have another outside source of income for this fabulous wealth? Before becoming Venezuela's ambassador to the UN, Ramirez was president of Venezuela's government-owned oil company, PDVSA, and for almost a year now, U.S. and Spanish investigators have been looking at kickbacks and other schemes that in that company, the country's top cash cow. Earlier this year, a top legislator in Venezuela's National Assembly joined the investigation, the investigators, by launching his own investigation into the alleged administrative irregularities during Ramirez's tenure at the top of the oil company. Allegations include money laundering, siphoning treasury funds into private bank accounts, bribery schemes, etc. All of the above allegedly add up to $7 billion in tainted funds. Now, if those allegations are true, that's $7 billion looted from a country that was already on the brink of economic calamity. According to U.S. and Spanish authorities, at least $2 billion of Venezuelan money was siphoned off from the company to a private bank in Andorra. So the point, I mean, one of the implications, apparently, Ambassador Ramirez's hard work and his dedication to communism and his, you know, his honorable, his ethics as a public servant allowed him to become a multi-billionaire. Right? Communism has been very, very good to me. When asked earlier this year about the federal investigation into corruption at the oil company under his leadership, Ambassador Ramirez declined to respond. He told Reuters that America has no jurisdiction over him. Besides, as Hillary Clinton might say, what difference does it make? But the far left is losing steam all across Latin America. Chavez's Bolivarian revolution is already a disaster for the public, and the gravy days of socialism for those in power seem numbered too. Now, here's where we get to what strikes me as an interesting hypothesis. I view the story about Venezuela's corruption as illuminating in regard to corruption in the U.S. government. And an interesting, again, this strikes an interesting theory, right? Because in is heightened government criminality always a hallmark of government, economic, the hallmark that a government, an economy, and a nation are about to collapse? Do government insiders see that their nation is clearly finished and heading down the toilet, and therefore they engage in whatever criminal acts are possible and loot whatever they can before the economic collapse? Knowing the economy and even the government will soon fail or be badly diminished, do high officials see no reason to worry about prosecution for crimes? For example, is the Clinton Foundation simply evidence of government corruption and ordinary greed? Or is the Clinton Foundation evidence that the U.S. economy, the Clintons know, people in positions of power know that the economy, the U.S. economy, is on the verge of a catastrophic collapse, and the government big shots are therefore trying to grab all they can by looting the country before the collapse takes place? Now, I don't know that I've explained this notion clearly yet, but what I'm trying to get to, do government officials loot the country simply because they're greedy, or does this looting, is it enhanced, accelerated, when they say, uh-oh, this thing's going down? Do we see more corruption when the economy is on the verge of collapse than we would when the economy is functioning and strong and it looks like it's going to last and on into the future. What do you think, Melody?
We saw it in Argentina. We see it in various countries. There's various phases of a collapse. And usually you're right. They strip the country. You have the bankers in there doing their deal. They have the politicians and the corruption and everybody else doing their deal. So, I mean, we've seen it in most of the collapses of countries. And the people of the country, you know, they're just we all know that they're in the last phase. They're the last ones to see and appreciate what's going on until after the fact.
Yeah.
And they lose everything. I mean, it's just like, you know, you talk about this guy being, you know, with the oil company, you have the deal. I mean, here, Venezuela, you know, at one point in time was making a lot of, you know, they were selling their oil. Now they're bartering it for medication and for medicine. And who's getting it? Is the guy in the street going to get the medication or?
Oh, he'll get it if he can come up with the money for it. I'll bet you that whoever has the whoever gets the medicine,
the people who own the oil company will be getting the medication.
It won't be given to the people.
Nope.
Probably. We don't know that for an absolute fact. But whoever gets hold of the medication, they will be selling it to the people. Got another article from Bloomberg that's a little bit along these lines in this regard. It's another sign of the times that we're headed for something unpleasant and probably massive. And the headline is, billionaire Soros cuts U.S. stocks by 37%, buys gold miner. Billionaire George Soros prepared last quarter for gloomy times, dialing back his U.S. stock investments by more than a third, betting against the equities while banking on gold. The value of Soros Fund Management's publicly disclosed holdings dropped by 37% to $3.5 billion at the end of March. And this is according to government filings on Monday. Soros bought bullish option contracts on 1.05 million shares of SPDR Gold Trust, which tracks the price of gold bullion. That's what's more, the fund took a 1.7% stake in the world's biggest gold producer, Barrick Gold Corp, worth $264 million at the end of March. Soros, who built a $24 billion fortune through savvy market wagers, has warned of risks stemming from China and the debt-fueled economy and so on. He has goes, but the point of the article is this. Here's a guy who has made $24 billion. I don't like him, all right? He's a despicable, ugly, fat
boy. You knew I was going to say something because every time you bring up Soros,
he has said he wants this country, he wants to destroy the United States of America. He wants to. And he said,
and a lot of his business savvy is because he is the elite, because he is, he planned and he stripped.
Get there by being a dummy. And whether he is the devil incarnate,
sold his soul.
Or not,
yes, he did.
He still knows what he's doing. And when he's dumping 37% of his stocks and moving into gold, it is evidence of an idea whose time has come.
And I agree with you. I mean, it is a sign that, you know, he moves in and out of this gold periodically and so forth. And Barrick Gold is one of the elite mining share companies. You know, they were in there back in the, you know, in the 90s and early 2000s. They were part of the problem of keeping the price of gold low, trying to keep it at that, you know, 250. They were part of Barrick Gold was part of the problem. So, but again, to me, what I find interesting about it and why I think it's important is because it people notice it's being written about, and that's what's important. Other people are talking about it, and those who don't know the backgrounds of Soros and so forth. So that's why these stories are important.
Well, they're important because they're available to the public. And
it's,
you know, we're talking
about,
we were talking a moment ago, we were talking one of the other articles, we were saying the people don't understand what's happening. The government becomes increasingly corrupt as we get closer to an economic collapse. That's at least a theory we can toy with. But most people don't pick up on that. But the point is, there are articles available. There's information if you want to read it. It's not like this is a secret. All right? This is the sort of information that you folks, you can figure this out for yourself. But you do have to make the effort of reading or listening or finding a source that you believe you can trust. But the information is here. It's only secret from those that are too lazy to get up off the couch and actually look and see what's happening. We see things, that, the story about George Soros, he's dumping a third of his stock and going into gold. Now he's going into paper gold, I get that. It's not the same thing as buying physical gold, which is what we talk about on it, but just the same, he's moving to gold. This is a sign that people can look at and say, you know, I think there's something happening here where if I were going to do what was best for me and my family for the next several years, maybe I ought to get some gold. The information is available. It's not a secret. It's not just a theory. You can put these, you can connect these dots, and you can come to conclusions that will serve you well. Huh? You got to do your own thinking. Do a little of your own research, but again, you don't need a PhD in economics when you see a report that someone like George Soros sold off 37% of his stock and is moving his money in the direction of gold. Don't need a PhD. You can figure this out. This is an intelligent man. He made $24 billion. He may be a hustler, a con artist. I don't know what all he is. I don't like the, you know, a drone. This guy should be identified for a drone strike, in my opinion.
But he's destroyed. He goes in and he destroys countries. And he's got the money to do it. That's how he made his money.
Enough knowledge to do it also.
That's how
I'm not saying he's a good guy. I'm just saying you have to you can't ignore this. I don't like the guy. I mean, when I say I don't like him, he wants to destroy the United States of America. I'm saying we should drone him. You understand? He's a bigger terrorist than ISIS and the rest of those people. But nevertheless, sign is there. Information is there. You can read this. You can find this. You can verify what we've just said. And you can do your own thinking and say, you know, maybe it's time you get some gold too. Melody and I are out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Frank the producer.
Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.